Inside Sustainability Interfaces. This podcast series offers inspiration for scientists, scholars, and other actors who want to reflect on sustainability and transformation and on the role science can play in society. Insights come from members of the Swiss Academic Society for Environmental Research and Ecology, SAGUF, who share an inter- and transdisciplinary perspective on environmental and sustainability research.
Science is often imagined as something detached, neutral, objective. But what role can science play when the world is burning? When the crisis you study, the floods, the fires, the collapsing ecosystems, are no longer far-off data points, but part of everyday life. Today's young researchers are caught in a tension, the pressure to analyze and the pull to act. This is the jungle young scientists are stepping into today, a dense, tangled landscape of ambition, urgency, risk, and hope. And it's in that jungle that the old rules of science, neutrality, distance, and detachment, are being questioned like never before. Sustainability science is growing fast, and with it, new movements toward more transformative forms of research. More and more researchers want to contribute to real-world solutions. And the pressure is mounting. How do you produce nuanced, rigorous research when time is short and the need for action is high? Some say science should stay neutral, observing, measuring, describing. Others believe it must take a stand and engage, intervene, or transform. Whether you're inside academia or simply curious about how science is evolving, this podcast explores how young researchers are navigating a shifting landscape, balancing between analysis and engagement, tradition and transformation, care and critique. Hi, Sarah Keller speaking, and in this podcast, I'll take you into conversations I had with young scientists across Switzerland. These early career researchers, mainly PhDs and postdocs, are navigating the pressures, hopes, and contradictions of what some affectionately and sometimes exasperatedly call the jungle of academia. This podcast is part of a project I developed together with the Swiss Academic Society for Environmental Research and Ecology, SAGUF for short, who originally came up with the idea and supported its realization. Our project is entitled Between Activism and Analysis, Exploring Sustainability Science in Dialogue with the Younger Generation. Through interviews and conversations, we originally wanted to understand how young scientists are navigating the tension between activism and analysis, between engaging with urgent societal challenges and meeting the demands of a traditional academic system. We talked about what it means to do science in times of crisis, about the tension between publishing and purpose, between institutional expectations and personal convictions, and about how to stay curious, engaged, and critical in a system that doesn't always make space for that. Through this broader initiative, SAGUF aims to spark critical reflections on sustainability research and its role in society, looking not just at what science says, but how it's shaped by the people and institutions behind it. So in this episode, I'll be sharing stories and insights from that project. What's on young scientists' minds, the challenges they face, and how they're trying to redefine what science can be. Not just as researchers, but as teachers, collaborators, and engaged citizens. So why focus on early career scientists? Well, because they were at a pivotal point, caught between hope and hesitation. They've grown up with global movements like Fridays for Future, and many entered academia driven by a sense of urgency and purpose. At the same time, they're stepping into institutions shaped by older norms, rigid hierarchies, and increasing pressure to publish, perform, and conform. That tension, the push for transformation on the one side and the weight of tradition on the other, makes them uniquely positioned to reflect on how science is evolving and where it might go next. A quick word too about where I'm coming from. I studied social and cultural anthropology at the University of Zurich, and I've worked in sustainable finance, the nonprofit sector, and in education. These experiences have shaped how I see science, not just as a body of knowledge, but as a social system woven through with values, structures, and historical patterns. That's also how I think about sustainability, not as a fixed goal, but as something constantly negotiated and redefined in research, in policy, and in everyday life. Scientists don't just study sustainability. They shape what it means through the questions they ask, the methods they choose, and the assumptions they carry into their work. With that lens in mind, the project explored a broad spectrum. On the one end, the idea of science as detached, objective, and neutral. On the other, the view that science must be actively engaged, political, and transformative. Most researchers, it turned out, were somewhere in between, balancing analysis and activism in ways that were often messy, creative, and deeply personal. After analyzing the conversations, three key themes began to stand out. The first theme is about rethinking what makes science work for sustainability. The second theme focuses on academia as a social system. With its own cultures, norms, and invisible rules, it's about how institutions frame what kinds of work are valued, what kinds of engagement are seen as legitimate, and how young researchers try to find room for critical or creative approaches while navigating career pressures and disciplinary boundaries. And the third theme looks at the emergence of new practices and collaborations, trying to move beyond conventional models of knowledge production. They're exploring how science might look if it were truly more open, relational, and transformative. Let's start with the first one. The first theme is rethinking the purpose of science for sustainability. It's easy to think of science as something neutral, just a way of describing the world as it is. But when you're studying issues like climate change, biodiversity loss, or social injustice, the line between observation and intervention starts to blur. Many of the young scientists I spoke with found themselves wrestling with this deeper question. Questions about what knowledge is for, about who it serves, and about how science positions itself in a world that urgently needs transformation. So let's dive into some of the ways these tensions showed up in the conversations. During our conversations, young scientists reflected critically on the traditional norms that have historically defined scientific practice and asked whether these approaches are enough for the messy and urgent demands of sustainability. Nathan, an agricultural economist, put it this way. Science tends to overwhelmingly focus on causality. We're pushed to ask, how does X influence Y? A simple cause and effect relationship. While this brings clarity and reliability, it stifles creativity. Complex questions, especially in sustainability, require considering multiple variables, and that doesn't always neatly fit together. Reflecting on agricultural policy in the Global South, Nathan pointed out that even technically neutral solutions can have unintended consequences. Sustainability demands a broader interconnected view, one that acknowledges social, environmental, and cultural dimensions that often resist simple measurement. The tension between scientific knowledge and real-world complexity extends beyond agriculture. Julia, who worked extensively in energy modeling, noted, "Even the best models have limitations, and our reliance on assumptions makes predictions uncertain at best." Yet the challenge isn't just about scientific methods, it's also about how scientific findings are received and used in public debates. This awareness was echoed by Vincent, an environmental economist who reflected on the political dimensions of science communication. He said, "Energy issues are inherently neutral, yet scientists are often expected to take a political stance. The real problem isn't science itself, but how politics handles scientific findings, and how scientists are sometimes forced to expose themselves to protect the integrity of their work." These reflections reveal a certain tension. Even when scientists aim for objectivity, their work is inevitably pulled into political and ideological currents. Sustainability research, in particular, is not just about generating solutions. It's about navigating social and political landscapes that shape how knowledge is received, used, and contested. What I picked up overall from these conversations was the view that for many researchers, this growing complexity demands humility in regards to what science is and can do. As Vincent put it, "In my view, my role in science is a very small and replaceable one. My goal is to promote new knowledge in a very specific area and hopefully make a small contribution to making things a little better." This humility doesn't mean passivity. It reflects a more grounded relational view of science, one that resists simplistic narratives of salvation or certainty. Aurelia, a political scientist, brought a sharp perspective on how the very topics we research reflect historical priorities shaped by societal values. "It is astonishing how long it has taken political science to deal with ecology and climate policy. When I was a student, there were hardly any lectures or seminars on these topics. They were considered a marginal issue. Only in recent years has this changed, driven by a young generation of researchers and students who cannot understand why climate policy hardly plays a role in a political science degree program, yet it is probably the mega topic of the next 50 years. Her reflection highlights something deeper. The absence of certain research topics in science isn't just a coincidence. It reflects historical priorities shaped by societal values, institutional norms, and political interests. By deciding which questions are worth asking, science doesn't just investigate reality. It actively shapes how problems are framed, which issues are seen as urgent, and what kinds of solutions become thinkable. In this way, the very act of deciding what gets researched and what doesn't is profoundly political. Science doesn't just produce knowledge, it influences which futures appear possible. This awareness, to me, reflects a generational shift. Younger scholars are not simply adding new topics to existing frameworks. They are embodying a critical stance toward the history and boundaries of their own disciplines. By questioning what is considered legitimate, urgent, or worthy of study, they are reshaping how science understands its responsibilities in a changing world. Julia offered a clear example of this critical reflection in action, showing how even well-intentioned sustainability solutions can backfire when they fail to account for the interconnectedness of social, political, and environmental systems. She explained it like this: "For a long time, social justice and climate policy were treated as separate issues in political science. But my research shows that understanding their interconnection is crucial for grasping the social impact of climate measures. Policies like CO2 taxes are often necessary, but if they aren't paired with social safeguards, they can hit vulnerable communities the hardest. It's not just about achieving environmental goals. It's also about maintaining public support and preventing a so-called green backlash that can be politically exploited by populist movements." This tension reveals something crucial. sustainability interventions are rarely neutral. Addressing these challenges demands more than technical fixes or isolated disciplinary approaches. It requires a deeper reckoning with the values, assumptions, and power structures embedded in scientific practice itself. Across the conversations, many young scientists expressed a similar shift in mindset. They aren't placing their agency in grand acts of activism. Instead, it shows up in the steady, deliberate work of questioning assumptions, expanding research agendas, and reshaping how knowledge is created. Their critical stance suggests that the traditional divide between scientific analysis and activism is not a rigid boundary. Rather than seeing political engagement as a threat to scientific integrity, they suggest that acknowledging values and interests can, in some cases, strengthen it. In doing so, they challenge the old illusion of scientific neutrality and open up a more generative way forward, one that doesn't simply react to urgent demands, but redefines how science can contribute meaningfully to societal change. With that in mind, let's turn to theme two. The second theme asks a deeper and maybe even harder question. Can academia itself sustain sustainability? Because if the first theme showed how young scientists are rethinking the purpose of science, this next one turns the lens onto the structures they're working within. The universities, the funding system, the hierarchies that define everyday academic life. In these conversations, it became clear that sustainability research isn't just about what scientists choose to study, it's also about the conditions of labor that shape what kinds of work are possible, valued, and supported. Many young researchers described an academic culture that prioritizes short-term measurable outputs, publications, grants, first author credits, over deeper, slower forms of engagement like teaching, collaboration, and interdisciplinary research. And while these pressures affect everyone, they weigh specifically heavily on early career researchers, those trying to carve out a place for themselves while navigating a system that often rewards competition over care and prestige over purpose. Let's dive into how these tensions showed up. One observation kept surfacing again and again. The academic system rewards what's easy to measure: papers, citations, grant money. As Julia, an energy researcher, put it bluntly, the pressure to publish or secure third-party funding often takes precedence over actual scientific progress. It's not always about what genuinely advances research, but what has the best chance of getting funded. And she's not alone in feeling this pressure. For early career researchers, the stakes are even higher. Nigel, another participant, captured this tension sharply. He said, "At this stage, the priority for me is securing a permanent academic position. So if I spend 6 months on something that doesn't result in a first author publication, it automatically feels like wasted time from the perspective of the academic system." In other words, even when researchers are deeply motivated by real-world impact, the academic reward system pulls them toward short-term, publication-driven goals. This raises a crucial question. What happens when academia discourages the very kinds of engagement that sustainability demands, which is slow thinking, collaboration, knowledge transfer, and critical dialogue? Some researchers are trying to carve out alternative spaces within these constraints. Teaching, for example, emerges as a quiet but powerful site of resistance for some. Aurelia, a political scientist, reflected on this when she said, "As an early career researcher, I often find myself torn between the pressure to publish and the desire to engage more deeply in knowledge transfer. Publications matter for academic visibility, but they tend to reach a small, specialized audience. Teaching, in contrast, offers the opportunity to make a broader, more lasting impact. Seminars, in particular, create spaces for critical reflection, where discussions can go beyond surface-level ideas and really deepen different perspectives. I believe my biggest impact lies in encouraging critical thinking and getting students to actively engage with important topics like sustainability. That's why I aim to present the full spectrum of climate policy debates and research, even including texts I don't fully agree with. because exposing students to diverse viewpoints is key to fostering meaningful dialogue. But while teaching offers an important site for impact, it also comes with its own tensions. Investing in meaningful teaching often means pouring energy and time into work that the academic system doesn't always value. Manuela, a lecturer in business and entrepreneurship, reflected on this quiet form of resistance during a workshop on teaching innovation. She shared something that really struck me. I don't want to teach the content how it was taught to me. I want to teach it in the way I would have wanted to learn about it. That means more time because I care about how I teach and enjoy interacting with students in a way that the curriculum can continually expand. Looking back, it was not the kind of learning environment that I received from the previous generation, and there aren't many resources for teachers today. Her reflection highlights an important point. Even within rigid structures, some researchers are reshaping academic spaces from the inside, turning teaching into a form of critical engagement and care. But this also raises a more fundamental question: how sustainable is academia itself? And to what extent do its conditions support or constrain the kind of research sustainability demands? Stefan, a postdoctoral researcher working on society and digitalization, he said, "Fundamentally, our scientific system isn't designed to effectively address societal challenges like sustainability. When we do contribute to solutions, it often happens despite the system, not because of it. The only reason anything meaningful comes out is thanks to the intrinsic motivation of the people within it." Emanuela, a social anthropologist working on conservation, captured the broader disillusionment many feel. She said, "Academia is not sustainable. It's competitive, hierarchical, and driven by excellence rather than curiosity. If we don't question these structures, we risk perpetuating systems of injustice." At its core, this theme redirects the analysis versus activism debate. It's no longer just about whether individual scientists should engage or whether they should stay neutral. It's about recognizing that academia itself, through its structures, incentives, and hierarchies, profoundly shapes what kinds of engagements are possible. And within these constraints, each researcher must constantly negotiate between ambition, care, and integrity, while navigating real risks to their careers in a system where alternative pathways are few and far between. If academia often constrains the possibilities for engaged scholarship, what can be done to open new spaces? One answer that emerged again and again in my conversation was simple in theory but complex in practice: collaboration. From silos to synergy, turning collaboration from ideal to practice. Young researchers are eager to build bridges, but they also share the real-world friction that comes with. Isabella, a researcher working on circular economy, she said, "Interdisciplinarity is always desired, but in practice it is often extremely difficult. Even when there is good thematic and methodological alignment, different scientific cultures collide, especially when it comes to publications. What is valid in one discipline often holds little significance in another. The real conflict often doesn't arise during the exchange itself, but when structural barriers emerge. Which journal to publish in, according to which standards, and under whose rules." In other words, getting researchers from different fields to talk to each other is one thing. Getting them to truly work together and be recognized for it is another. Isabella went further, highlighting how structural barriers, not just intellectual ones, stand in the way of collaboration. "We would like to collaborate with other institutes or interdisciplinary projects, especially when it comes to social aspects of sustainability and transformation research. However, bureaucratic and logistical hurdles often get in the way. Even within my higher education institution, navigating these processes is highly complicated. But collaborating with external partners is even more difficult. Sometimes we identify a research problem where it would make sense to involve an expert from another field, but then questions arise like, how many hours are available? What is their hourly rate? How do we organize this within the project budget? Because these processes are so administratively burdensome, many important interdisciplinary connections simply never happen." Margaret, a PhD student involved in a large multi-university project, shared the following. When writing interdisciplinary proposal, it's hard to avoid disciplines sticking to their own parts. And even when the project begins, there's often no time or space to properly integrate ideas. What's missing are resources and platforms to support this process throughout the research lifecycle. It's not enough for each discipline to write their own package. Real integration happens when ideas and approaches are developed together, starting from the proposal stage. And that's just interdisciplinarity, working across academic disciplines. When researchers try to go further into transdisciplinary work, involving societal actors, policymakers, or local communities, the challenges multiply. Doing research with society rather than on society demands different skills: negotiation, reflexivity, cross-cultural communication, and the genuine willingness to share authority over the research process. Pooja, a social scientist working on mobility, pointed to the difficulty of even establishing relevance. She said, "The challenge is two-way. Communities might not see how sustainability is relevant to them, while stakeholders or experts might not consider the community's concerns as relevant." In other words, meaningful engagement requires building two-way conversations, not just inviting people to participate in predefined projects. And it's not just about relevance, it's also about language. Mariana, a social scientist working on sustainable mining, emphasized, "We have to be very conscious and very reflexive when we design our data collection tools and approach communities. If we aren't careful, we risk making people feel excluded from discussions on sustainability simply because the language is too technical or the concepts don't match with their lived experiences." So, even when participatory processes are included, they often risk being shallow, more about checking the box than genuine collaboration. Mariana continued to say, "A lot of cooperation needs to take place between the North and the South to build a truly sustainable world. But it has to be meaningful cooperation, not just a surface level exchange. We need to integrate different types of knowledge, both scientific and local, and address the power imbalances that still exist. If this doesn't happen, we can't reach sustainability." Listening to these reflections, one question kept circling back for me. If interdisciplinarity and societal engagement are so essential, why are they still so hard to truly practice? Skills like negotiation, cross-disciplinary communication, navigating power dynamics, and sharing ownership of knowledge. These skills are often expected but rarely taught. That's why, in my view, teaching plays such a crucial role in building a more engaged and transformative science. If we want a research culture that truly values integration and societal engagement, maybe we can't just expect scientists to figure it out once they're already working. Maybe we need to create spaces early on in teaching and mentoring in curriculum design that prepare researchers to work across disciplines and across worldviews. They also need to learn about the structural barriers to collaboration and the ethics of impact-driven research. Otherwise, it feels like science risks getting stuck between rhetoric and reality, praising interdisciplinarity and engagement while making them institutionally difficult to pursue. But I also see hopeful signs. Across Swiss universities, new interdisciplinary master programs are emerging. Elective courses are being co-designed with transdisciplinary institutes, and new workshops are helping faculty rethink how they teach and collaborate. There's a lot happening, and even if these efforts are still uneven and experimental, they show that new ways of doing science are not just imaginable, but already underway. The real challenge now, it seems to me, is how we can nurture these beginnings, how we can turn scattered innovations into lasting shifts, shaping a research culture that's more connected, more reflexive, and more open to the world it hopes to serve. All right, we've explored the themes and heard from scientists and dug into the tensions shaping sustainability research today. Now, let's bring it all together. The researchers I spoke with are not simply choosing between analysis and activism. They are navigating a much deeper terrain. One where shaping science also means living within and pushing against the structures that govern it. Several key tensions stood out. The relentless pressure to publish and perform measurable impact, the challenge to outdated ideals of scientific neutrality, the persistence of hierarchical structures that define visibility and value, the shifting roles of younger scholars who move between researcher, communicator, and advocate, even as the systems they inhabit lag behind. Rather than framing engagement as an individual choice, it became clear that opportunities for action are shaped by the broader academic structures themselves. And here, an often overlooked dimension came into focus: academic citizenship. Academic citizenship captures the invisible work that holds scientific communities together, such as mentoring, peer review, institutional governance. Work remains undervalued in competitive academic systems. Recognizing academic citizenship shifts our understanding. It reveals that shaping science isn't only about producing new research, it's about sustaining and transforming the spaces where knowledge is created. Throughout this journey, one thing became clear to me. When we talk about shaping science, we must distinguish between research practices and the academic system itself, and recognize how deeply intertwined they are. Young researchers today are not only innovating in their fields, they are also pushing back against outdated structures, often in small, creative acts of resilience that deserve to be seen and supported. Small, hard-won openings where new ways of doing science can take root. Science is not only a matter of knowledge, it is also a matter of belonging, responsibility, and care. As we wrap up, I want to thank the researchers who shared their experiences and insights, as well as SAGUF and UChange for supporting this project. Special thanks to Claudia Zingerli, Basil Bornemann, Alin Atzinger for your guidance and inspiration. And to you, the listener, if you have ideas or examples of how engaged scholarship and academic citizenship are reshaping the spaces we inhabit, do reach out. Let's continue exploring not just how science is practiced, but how it is lived and sustained. And with that, I thank you very much for listening and wish you a good day on.